Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, writer-comedian Abby Schachner talks about how she said goodbye to her father.
This time I was going to do it right. My father was dying and I was going to say, you can let go now, like a normal person. And I start to cry, like my lips trembling, to see him, like, you know, he's aged, you know how that happens. He looks old and he looks at me in a way that he hasn't seen me like that. He wants to comfort me and I want to comfort him too, but we both are incapable of doing so. So instead of saying you can let go now, I said, Dad, hey Dad, Joe got a blowjob in a church.
Today on the show, writer-comedian Abby Schachner talks about her eclectic family and saying goodbye to her father. Stay close.
Hi, this is Abby Schachner, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. And whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, Happy New Year, and welcome to Storyworthy. Guess what?
What?
It's my birthday.
What?
Today, January 7th.
Happy birthday!
Is my birthday. I know. It happens, you know, every year. It never stops. It's hard getting old in this town, man, I gotta say, in Los Angeles.
I think it's hard getting old in general, but yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. It's true. But in Los Angeles, you know, and I do this in my stand-up now. You know, that my breakdown used to be casual mom, pretty but average. I would get ready for an audition. I would say to my husband at the time, how do I look, honey? And he'd say, pretty but average. It's like, good, that's what I need. That's my target. But now my breakdown has changed. And it's casual older woman, average.
Well, I'm looking across.
That's the breakdown. No, but they took away the pretty. They just took it out.
Well, I'm going to tell you that they kept the pretty out, but I see the pretty. When I look at you, I see the pretty. I see the talented.
You're so sweet.
What's a breakdown anyway?
Well, a breakdown is the description they're looking for. So it's actually in my line of work. It's sort of important.
That's
I'm
true.
Just saying. It is what it is. And last week, I kid you not, right on target, as I'm going to turn, you know, get, in fact, a little older, I get an audition for Incontinence.
Oh, my God.
And you know what? I did really well. And so I'll probably get it. It's for a wherever underwear. So,
oh, well.
You know, maybe I'll get it.
That's a big business. I feel like they should have, or they probably have thongs for incontinence. I mean, they've really advanced. There's a whole aisle at CVS for incontinence. Who knew? It's really come out of the closet in terms of shame about piddling.
This is my new breakdown. Anyway, you guys, I'm so happy you're here with me today. And I hope you enjoyed last week's show with Mark Fernandez. Mark Fernandez, as you know, Abby, funny guy, comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And his story was about dating a stripper. Did you listen to it?
I did. I remember. I love that part when it felt like an awkward fairy tale to me. But when she was ploying him on each, remember, on the way home.
And yeah, she kept saying, "A gentleman would drive me home. You know, a gentleman would walk me to the door." Like she kept pulling this line out that she's probably used 1,000 times. Anyway, Mark Fernandez is damn funny. So go back and listen to his story about dating. Well, I don't know. Yeah, you said you listened to it. He dated not only one stripper. He dated two strippers and a porn star. So he has a lot of, he's covered a lot of bases.
Well, I think he sounds like apparently an open-minded,
liberated,
yeah,
man. That's true. Yeah, he's evolved.
Did you ever strip or want to strip?
No, I never stripped, and I never wanted to strip, to tell you the truth. Interesting. Did you?
I never did, but I secretly wanted to.
Interesting.
If only to try it once.
But. Yeah. In front of strangers or in front of somebody you know?
I mean, I took a weird class called Stripping for Actors once that became a weird kissing fest and whatever. People hooked up together. People cheated on their spouses. But I am not, I don't lead with a sexual foot, Christine.
Yeah. Acting classes are so damn funny, aren't they?
Well, that was certainly, this woman raked it in for the weekend because people were just, they were craving to reveal, men and women were craving to get up and reveal, You know, yeah. We didn't get naked, but we, you know, the art of seduction, which...
And people want to be heard. I think that's a lot of acting class, you know?
But that's not a lot of talking in a stripping for actors class. There was no talking at all.
You guys, go back, listen to Mark Fernandez, but not today, because today I'm here with comedian and writer Abby Schechner, and she brings forth the topic, you can let go now. Mm-hmm. You can let go now. So I am assuming she's talking about letting go of someone who's, you know, passing away. Mm. And I've shared with my audience before that I was with my dad when he passed away. It'll be 5 years ago. Mm. It's February. Yeah,
it I'm sorry sucks. To hear that.
Yeah, it sucks. But it was really special being with him because they had these hospice people come in, and those people are really bright. I mean, they do this really important job of educating you as to what is going on. And, you know, my baby is 12, but when I had a child, I remember reading the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting. And really, the hospice brings these pamphlets that is like, what to expect when you're dying. And basically, like, let's say there were 10 things to expect. My dad was just clicking them off one by one, you know, like... You know,
with the Shane Stokes, remember with the breathing, how the breathing changes?
Yeah, the breathing.
The rattle.
The rattle, the death rattle. Oh, Jesus, that's depressing.
I didn't hear my dad's. I was there for my stepfather when he passed away, but I wasn't with my dad during the moment.
Okay. Well, it's an interesting time. I'm anxious to hear your story, and I encourage anybody out there who might have someone close to them who, you know, may be passing soon, to try to get into, you know, if they're important to them. It's important, I think, to be in the room, if you can be. Absolutely.
That's what I hear. I mean, yeah. Honestly, it's also, though, a very vulnerable and scary thing. Like, I admire people who do it.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get more natural than death.
No.
So it's, well, anyway, you're a comedian, you're a writer, you've done so many interesting things, so I have a feeling this story will not be depressing.
Oh,
well, maybe it will.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Well, I look forward to it. But listen, before we get to Abby's story, I wanted to remind you guys to follow Storyworthy on Twitter and Instagram at Storyworthy. And then, of course, you got to check out Story Smash, my storytelling game show that is going so well down at the Improv. You were there, Abby.
Loved it. I loved it so much. It was great.
Yeah, it's a great show. Super tight. The next show is January 25th. And then again, February 29th. That's a leap year. How exciting is that?
It's so exciting. I mean, how rare is that?
Yeah, it's like an extra day of free rent.
I've said before that I'm a leap year lesbian. Every 4 years for about 28 days, I have a fling with a woman. And I'm considering making it more seasonal. But
that's interesting. Oh, seasonal. So that'd be every quarterly.
I don't know. I'd be open to it, but I don't know. Right now, I'm not. I haven't been so open to either sex. To be honest.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. If you're bisexual, getting that choice of like the entire population.
But I'm still incredibly closed-minded in general. You know, like I need to learn how to receive. How about that? Like,
yeah.
I need to learn how if I want to love. I need to learn how to receive.
All right, that's a good plan.
Thank you.
That's a good goal for 2020.
It is a good goal.
And so you guys, follow Story Smash on Instagram. That's where I need you, on Instagram, at Story Smash, because I have all the action there on the Instagram feed. It's super entertaining because you get to see, you know, all the past guests. I must have like 700 photos up of the show, you know, during the show. So it's really great, at Story Smash. Get over there, and I would appreciate it. All right, you guys, she's here right now, Abby Schechner. Like I said, she's a comedian and a writer, and she's written a lot of beautiful children's books. Not only have you written these books, but you've done the illustrations. They're just beautiful. Some of the titles are When Monsters Are Happy, The Breathing Book, which is teaching kids how to meditate. Not even so much meditate, but just how to breathe and, you know, and take stock in their body and be present and all that good stuff.
You know, I smoked a lot of cigarettes while doing the breathing book. I'm a very contrary, you know, unfortunately, the things that I like want to purport. But that's why you do something, why you burn to share something, because you haven't mastered it. So you try to learn too.
I hear what you're saying. Well, these books are all very uplifting and beautiful. And the colors are bright. And check them out over there at yourfriendabby.com. I love that whole, what do you call it? A
You were going to say moniker or something?
Yeah, moniker. That whole moniker, your friend Abby, because Shackner is a tricky last name. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. I can't. I have an issue with saying my name, and I don't know what, you know, agents or publishers think about the fact that I chose your friend Abby, but I feel more comfortable not saying my last name.
Yeah, I love it. Your friend Abby. So head over there, you guys, and you can also find Abby over on Twitter at Abby Shack, S-C-H-A-C-H. And on Instagram at your_friend_Abby. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Abby Shackner.
Yay.
Yay.
Well, I'm going to set the scene of this story. It starts off in the hospital. And I'm standing at the edge of my dad's hospital bed. And finally, it's me and him. And after about 5 days of constant visitors and my stepmother laying in bed with him, feeding him chicken soup like the saint that she, you know, is or was, I finally have my moment with him. And my eyes are focusing on the door because I need to get out what I want to say. I'm going to tell him you can let go now. And I had been thinking about this for a long time. So I'm staring at him. I'm about to like reach out, you know, physically or energetically to say that. And all of a sudden, I did a little pull the switcheroo in my mind. I'm like, he's not ready to let go. I can't say it. Who am I to say this? So instead I decide I need to wake him up. You know, I need to shock him. And I say, Dad, hey, Dad, Joe got a blowjob in a church. Okay. Now, I had flown home to Toledo from Los Angeles because I'd gotten the call from my brother that my father was probably going to die. And the whole plane ride there, I'm thinking, I'm going to say, you can let go now. And I had like shared it with flight attendants. I shared it with friends before I went home, maybe an occasional homeless person. I was practicing to say, you can let go now, because I wanted to prove that I was a good daughter. And this is how I was going to do it. And I needed to do that because of the nature of our relationship. We had such an intense dynamic between him and my mother. And I just wanted to encapsulate it and be like a mature young woman. But the truth is, I felt a lot of pressure because 9 months before my father passed away, I'd gone home to Toledo, where I'm from. And apparently I disappointed my stepmother, because when I had come back to town, I was living in Silver Lake at the time, she mailed me a letter. And on this letter, it was like August. It was like a one room schoolhouse with snow on it. And she basically told me in the letter that she was disappointed in me and that, you know, I didn't respect my father. He was scared he was going to die and I wasn't there for him. And typically she would send like packages with homemade cookies or like daisies and handwritten. And she didn't even sign the card with love. So like I knew that something was wrong. So it is true. 9 months before I had my father passed away, I had gone home to Toledo, where I'm from. And I was staying at the house I grew up in, not at my dad's, because I rarely stayed at my dad's. I stayed at my dad's like a couple of times after he married my stepmother. One time I stayed over there. My father was having sex with my stepmother. I heard her ask him why he didn't, you know, come. They were talking upstairs, and I heard him grumble, "Don't worry about it." Anyway, it was just odd.
How old were you?
I was probably then, I think I was, they'd gotten married probably like 18.
Yeah.
They got married my freshman year in college. And
like the last thing you want to hear.
One time they were having sex in Florida and he yelled over at me in the, like over the banister afterwards. I'm thinking, and it was just gross. It was like obnoxious. And, you know, her son would say that she was, you know, really liked sex. Like he was used to hearing it. I had never heard that in my life. So it was very odd. And that my father, like one time in Florida, like yelled over the banister. It was just bizarre.
Yeah.
Anyway, and just hearing your father do that. But then, blah, blah, blah. I'm getting sidetracked. But I was home 9 months before, but I was staying at my house, and I was also with my friend Joe, who was my dad's best friend's son. And I used to have a thing with Joe. Joe was at the University of Chicago. He was in getting his doctorate in philosophy, and we used to date, but he came home to Toledo, and we were fighting, and when I went to visit my dad, you know, at this particular time. And Joe went to leave me one night. I think he was going to escape and go back to Chicago and leave me in Toledo, 4.5 hours away. But instead, he got picked up by the police. So I'm awoken at 3 a.m. with a police escorting Joe to my front door in Toledo. I think he probably didn't know.
What did he do?
I think he basically might have pulled in front of like, on the side of the road. He might have been smoking weed. He might have just been relaxing before he committed to the 4.5 hour trip or clearing his head. But they saw this car, and I don't think he knew where I lived because it was before, you know, cell phones and maps. I think he told them whose house it was. So they escorted him home. Like, they walked up at 3 a.m, you know, two cops on Joe's side to see if this is where he was, and it was. So I let him in. So anyway, she sent me this letter saying, you know, you weren't around for your dad and all this other stuff. And here's the thing. When I was looking at that letter, I thought, no one told me that my father was scared or that he thought he was dying. And my dad didn't tell me he was fearing about a surgery or something like that. To me, he was invincible. Okay. My dad used to move detour signs on bridges and drive over them. He would like threaten people on the road with guns, threaten to bash their cars in. He'd park at the ambulance bay in the hospital. He was a doctor, but there was a whole parking lot for cars. He parked where the ambulances were supposed to be. He even hired a hitman to kill my mother. Now, granted, the hitman was an undercover cop, but he didn't even go to jail. Like, he was invincible to me. Okay. But I learned my lesson. I got the message. This time I was going to do it right. My father was dying, and I was going to say, you can let go now, right, like a normal person. So when I get to Detroit, I go to Toledo, where I'm from, and I go to the ICU to see my dad. And I'm standing in the doorway, and I say, Dad, like, I can't see his face because he's reading a newspaper. And I can see his hat, like, above, like, he's wearing a Gilligan's Island hat. He always wore hats. He had lupus. So I don't know if he was, like, it was eating him away. And I don't know if he'd wear hats because he's, like, drafty or cold. He was bald. But I say, Dad, and he doesn't hear me. So I say, Dad, again. And he moves down the newspaper, and I see his face. And I start to cry. Like, my lips trembling, like, to see him, like, you know, he's aged, you know how that happens, he looks old, and he looks at me in a way that he hasn't, like, seen me like that. He wants to comfort me, and I want to comfort him too, but we both are incapable of doing so. And when I was younger, like in my teenage years, because this is around when I'm like 30, my dad used to say in front of people, like at a party, when you ask Abby how she's doing, she says, what do you care? And like, he'd like imitate me with my arms all tight. And I didn't like that he was always trying to crack me, like in front of his friends. And I was cracking right in front of him, like in the hospital. And this is like, I was being weak and it bothered me. It hurt. And I don't like hurting. You know, this is why I smoke cigarettes and drink coffee and smoke weed, because, you know, hurting sucks. Now, that night, the first night that I saw him and I cried, I went home to the house that I grew up in. No one's there. I'm just staying there by myself. And in my bedroom, I made up a song, and I'm going to sing it. I made up two songs, but I made up a song that I imagined singing it as eulogy. And I made this up in my bedroom, and it goes like this. It goes, I don't know where you are, but I'm going to sing this song for you. I don't know where you are, but I adore you. You're the best, yes, by far, and you're so unique, that's what you are. I don't know where you are, but I adore you. And I kept on singing it and repeating it and crying it. But then this song came to me. I got so vulnerable singing and envisioning his funeral that this song came to me like at once. Daddy, your DNA, daddy, your DNA, daddy, your DNA is making me sick. 1, 2, 3, 4, daddy is wasting away. He is pale and thin and gray. Daddy is wasting away. Is it karmic? He once was a prick. He breathes in and out of a machine. When I first had my period, he thought it was my spleen. He exposed me to things I wouldn't have otherwise seen. Like a man whose head was crushed by a semi-trachea. Trachiotomies too, elephantiasis, halitosis, and Las Vegas. Daddy, your DNA, daddy, your DNA, daddy, your DNA is making me sick. So, like, to protect myself, okay, wow. So that's how I work. Oh, you're very sweet.
You are such a talent. You're such an artist.
Oh, well, come
on. That was as punk as you get.
Well, I mean, I had to because I was feeling, you know, such intense feelings, so I was repeating this song to make myself comfortable, and every time I went to the hospital after that, on this particular visit, my dad's friends were there, the rabbi, my stepmom, and I wasn't getting any time by myself, and I didn't know how to ask for it. And also, just so you know, it was very hard to watch my dad, you know, in that hospital, because when I was a kid, my dad was a I used to be a fixture. I'd go with my dad to the hospitals because he'd do rounds. And on Sundays, because my parents were divorced, I spent a lot of time in hospitals.
What kind of doctor was he?
He was an ear, nose, and throat and facial plastic surgeon. So I basically saw him pull a lot of packs out from tonsils, like 6 foot, like he'd say, it's not going to hurt. And then I'd watch him go, like pull it like a clown thing, like of six feet long, like packs. I stood between a woman's legs when she had a baby. He would take me to like see things that are interesting. I was 13 years old. He said, if anyone asks, tell them you're in med school. Some things that probably I did. I saw a woman have a facelift and a breast job the same day. I'd see tracheotomies. I saw like what nurses he respected, who he didn't. One time I went to the cafeteria, I was like 10 years old, and I said my name, Shackner, and the woman at the cafeteria, like in the checkout thing, said, a lot of people don't like your daddy, but I like your daddy. Now, another thing that happened in the hospital, which
wait a minute, was he letting you be in the room during operations, yes, essentially?
Yes.
In the room?
Yes.
In scrubs?
Yes.
You were in a scrubs outfit.
At 13 years old. 13. No, 13, I stood between a woman's legs and watched her have a baby.
Did she know you were there?
I don't know, but I saw an episiotomy. I mean, like, I was there. I saw forceps. My friend who was with me was never allowed to hang out with me.
Dad was such a character.
Well, let me tell you something, too, which I didn't even say. The whole hitman undercover cop thing went down in the parking lot of the hospital, and my brother and I were with my dad. I was 6 years old. My brother was 11. We were in the doctor's lounge while my dad put $11,000 in a glove compartment to
kill your mother.
Yes.
Why did he want to kill her? Just briefly.
Well, he owed her a lot of, apparently, like even in 1978, because I've read the article since, but he owed her apparently a lot of money, like $97,000 in 78. And he had an issue with my mother. Like, she was marrying the wealthy guy down the street. He's like, I'm not going to give you. It was a trigger for him. He was very cheap, you know. So
he got caught. The scheme was
unraveled. Got caught, but he didn't go to jail. I mean, I didn't see him for a little bit, but he didn't go to jail, or he got out of it because he paid the hitman after the fact, and after the fact, and that time in Ohio didn't count.
Meaning that he didn't do it.
He didn't do it, but the hitman was an undercover cop. And so basically he was set up, and years later he told me that he said that he was set up and he knew he was set up. So he was just going to like play it to the edge. So he basically, it was very difficult to watch him old in this hospital. He used to like run the joint. He used to strut down those hallways, and now he's like a withered man and no one's dealing with him. Like, you know, what I knew as a child, you know, this energy. And to top it off too, my brother told me like a couple nights before in the hospital parking lot about his sexual proclivities, like what he does with his girlfriend, that they, you know, whatever. And it was just a lot was going on.
Yeah, so, your family, yeah, it's a lot of drama.
So the day before I'm going to go back to Los Angeles, I go to see my dad, and nobody's in the room. And I don't know why this happened in my brain, but as I'm about to say it, I remember that before my dad died, it might have been the 9 months before, maybe sometime like a year and a half before, he one day mentioned a woman who gave the blessed blowjobs, like a friend that I knew, like a friend, someone who used to date another friend of his named Mark. And she happened to be petite with a, you know, overbite or whatever, but he mentioned that. So like, for some reason, when I was standing in front of him, you know, as he's dying, as opposed to saying, you can let go now, I thought, well, I had this story from Joe. He probably doesn't want me to share it, but I thought, you know,
yeah, it'll perk him up. Yeah. We're
a lot alike, and maybe he should know what like the younger generation's up to and all that stuff. So instead of saying, you can let go now, I said, Dad, hey Dad, Joe got a blowjob in a church. And my dad looked at me like on morphine. You know, he's on a lot of morphine. It's like each word like floated like an air balloon away, like looking at me like, why are you telling, you know, like, huh? So I say it again. Joe got a blowjob in a church. And those were my last words to my father. His last words to me or the next day in front of my stepmom and the rabbi, he told me to wear high heels, a skirt, and go to medical school. Now, which was, and he also wanted me to be more like Jay Leno, and at the time I was like a performance artist, but whatever. Now, I never got to sing at his funeral, and no one ever even asked me to do the eulogy. And what's worse, I think, is that I didn't have the confidence to ask, you know? And not long after he died, I heard through the grapevine that my stepmother had told the lawyers I was a bad daughter. And she ended up marrying my dad's other best friend, Mark, and cutting my brother and I out of, you know, their lives.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I was the best daughter or the worst daughter that day, but I was his daughter. You know, mm-hmm. I am a Shackner. And in all those years after the fact, you know, all of that, what I was trying to tell him, you can let go now. I think I need to say to myself, you know, I can let go now.
That's huge. That's huge. And so his last words to you, you know, that day after you talked about Joe, his last words to you were literally, you should wear high heels and go to medical school.
That's, high heels, a skirt, and go to medical school, yeah.
And he's on his deathbed.
Yeah.
That is so...
And I cried in front of them. I wanted to say, and like, once again, the rabbi was there, my stepmother's there, and I wanted to tell him, like, I'll be okay. But that was one of his mantras to me. He always would say, like, that. He said that several times in my life, like, wear high heels, a skirt. I still...
So it's just like, I guess you would say, you know, a leopard doesn't change his spots. He's just... It was what he was. He never changed.
No, he was very unique unto himself. He was a Brooklynite who ended up in Toledo, created his own rules, lived his own life. Yeah. You know, and...
So, wow. So do you feel like you are at peace with all of this? And how old was he, by the way?
He was 70.
70 is young.
Yeah, I know. And that was 17 years ago. And then Gretchen, my stepmother, she actually passed away, I think, like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, that's too bad.
But we hadn't talked for 17 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. Yeah, family is really tricky. And I think sometimes the best thing to do with family is just to say, well, you know, whether it's your parent or your sibling, you know, that's just the way they are. Like, it's not personal and you're not going to change them. It is what it is. And that's who they are. It's not a reflection on you. It's just what they decided to be in their lives.
Yeah. I just think that the idea that I thought that I could be like the type of person to say, you can let go now, when I had so much more than that to say. And that I guess the saddest thing about like this story to me is that I didn't have the, like I said at the end, like, didn't have the confidence to, like, ask to do a eulogy. Didn't have the confidence to ask to have time by myself with my father.
Well, it's a lot to muster up because you're in, you know, especially if somebody dies at home and it's anticipated. Like, they're obviously dying because hospice is here and they're doing palliative care.
Right.
And he's not getting better and we're not going back to the hospital and this is where it's going to end. So everybody is in a state of not necessarily shock, but I mean, it's very personal to each and every person.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot to deal with. So you can't put the pressure on yourself that you thought you could sum it all up in a, you know, 5-minute private conversation with him. I mean, you know, we're trying to, like tie up loose ends. But at the same time, sometimes it's just going to be unsaid.
Yeah, that's true.
That sucks, man.
That's true.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. No, hey, you know, honestly...
But people listen, people do it every day in terms of leaving words unsaid and then somebody dies in a tragic accident or somebody has an aneurysm or a heart attack or whatever, and then all of a sudden it's cut short. So hospice or with people getting older, that is something that we can like, now as we get older, maybe we can move forward with the idea that, you know, I'm going to try to be more present and do better next time because you're probably going to be with somebody else. You know what I mean? As we get older, this is not...
I'm not good at that, though. Honestly, I don't... It incites stuff. I'm not good at handling deaths. I'm not the most nurturing type. It has brought up so much fear in me. And I think growing up, I think I might have been like the problem considered... I'm quoting, making finger quotes under the table. But I think I was always considered the problem. So I don't feel like I'm like the healthiest person in that respect. You know, I'm sort of...
Right. But I'm just saying that like we never stop growing.
Yeah, that's
true. Or we can always grow.
Right.
You know what I mean? We don't have to grow, but we can.
Right.
And so I'm just saying there's opportunities to kind of... You know, I'm not saying get used to it, but it's kind of like, you know, as we get older, we have more experiences.
That's true.
And you breathe into it and, you know, next thing you know.
No, and it is true. I have improved and I have gotten better in terms of like, you know, he was one of the bigger ones. My stepsister died also, who I was very uncomfortable, you know, and I loved her, but afraid to be around her, like afraid to be around someone. And I was younger. She died before my dad, but afraid to, and that was my stepfather's daughter, but afraid to... go through that. I feel a little bit better, like getting older, because obviously we've had more loss and whatnot. But what that, I think the hardest part was like the dynamic between my stepmother after, like that I was that I was misunderstood and thought to be a bad daughter, and
right.
and like considering my upbringing, maybe I turned out okay, but like, you know, just because of the extremes of having the personality types that I did as my parents, you mm-hmm. know.
When you mentioned that your dad hired a hitman to kill your mother, I kind of wanted to scream, you buried the lead, you know, because that's intense, Abby.
Yeah.
And so how did you and your brother deal with that?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I've done a lot of solo shows. I don't know if you know that about me.
Yeah, how many solo shows have you done? I've done
like, maybe like 10.
Wow. Different shows.
Different. Oh, yeah, different. But it only, it took me to like number 9 to like talk directly about my life. I typically don't do that. Because I was told, maybe because of the extreme thing of my parents, that they told me not, you know, never to talk about my life, probably because one of the biggest things that happened in my life was due to them. And, you know, it was a newspaper-worthy thing. You know, it was a big deal. And I did Shackner versus Shackner. And when I was working on, and that's the name of the court documents and all that stuff, and that's what the show was, or the fight of my parents. But, like, my brother thought I was crazy, you know, to talk about it and to share that. I figured out an artful way to talk about it, but it took me till I was like, you know,
no kidding.
42.
Yeah.
To talk. I mean, I could mention, I used to mention it as a blip. The problem with things when you get older is you realize, oh, it actually affected my life. Like I used to just say it like in my 20s. And then a friend that I used to perform with who's gone off, I don't know if you know Tammy Sager.
No.
She's the one that suggested that she's like, why haven't you done a show on that?
Yeah.
And I guess it's because I didn't, only until I got older and looking back did I realize I was playing their relationship out in various relationships. You know, I've played their, I had a 70s divorce relationship with, you know, one guy who's now not living, but like, you know, various unhealthy dynamics. I mean, it was extreme. I tried to tell my mom when I was doing that show that like, because, you know, same thing. Why can't you just forget about it? And when I was growing up, like when I was 14, and I'd be like, you know, I'd get mad and want to know about what happened between them. And she'd like tell me, like, ask your father, go ask your father. Like she'd feel shamed and take it personally. And I had I started developing a lot of anger. Neither of them talked about it. Like they talked about each other.
Craziest thing. That is so crazy to think that happened. And their strategy is, we just won't address it and it'll go away. It's like your parents were on like 48 hours, you know, in this scheme. You know, your dad is a doctor. Can't you just hear Keith Morrison doing the whole story?
Oh my God.
I mean, it's so shocking. And then their reaction is just don't talk about it.
Oh my God. Don't talk about it. I had an eating disorder at 14, put in the hospital. They would not, you know.
That was probably directly related to the stress that you were going through.
Well, I think too, when what happened with me, Christine, is I think when boys were introduced and sexual stuff was introduced, I think between the dynamic of men and women, the way my father was with women, you know, all this stuff, and I what it triggered in my mother, I feel like it was an explosion in myself. Yeah. I don't know how men and women react.
Yeah.
I grew up in a home, my mom married someone 21 years older than her. I lived in a big home where no one communicated. I didn't really see love. And my father married this woman, but not till I was like 18, she was supposed to be perfect. I didn't understand. And like, obviously
Was she younger?
She was younger than him and younger than my mother. And like I said, she just passed away, but
they can always go younger, men. You know, when men go younger, they'll go even younger.
Oh my God. Yeah, he did go even younger, but
yeah.
And whatever.
Is your mom alive?
She is.
Yeah. And
she's living the life.
Do you have a good relationship with her?
I do, but good. I mean, I still feel like, I mean, and I love my mother, but I think in some ways she wanted a best friend when she, you know, I think.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, sure. I know, like, you know, in my own family, you know, my mom met my dad when she was like 14 or 15. They got married when she was 18. And she had 6 kids by the time she was 30. So it's like, you know, they're in a way in arrested development. You know, and in a way, you know, it's kind of like if you have to be an adult at 18, then, you know, when are those, like, when is that going to come out later in your life? You know, missing out on, you know, adolescence and your early 20s. I mean, I feel like nobody really can get their shit together till you're at least 25 or 30 when you have, you know, something behind you. So if you're thrown a family and you're thrown kids at 20 years old, you know, something's going to give.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Well, and I'd probably say exactly. I mean, my mom didn't experience it that way, but I should give her some credit. She married extreme, you know, and she had to deal with my father, even though he's charming and funny in his own right. But I wish in some ways things were different. Like, you know, we even talked about yesterday, or just the idea and looking at some of the things she's done and having resentment towards them.
Yeah.
But then also playing them out in my life too. Like, you know, being with the person who's successful, but missing certain aspects, like a nice house doesn't fix the holes.
I know. But the thing is we're taught, or at least I was, you know, not taught, but that the images on television are that, you know, you get this house and you get this car and you go to these restaurants and you wear these clothes and everything will be fine. We know that's not true, but that doesn't mean we don't have those feelings. And so we sometimes go for that, and then you just waste time because it's never going to flesh out.
Even it's though that's something you might have known. I mean, I knew that at 15. I knew that none of that, I mean, definitely before I left for college, I knew that it was all bullshit.
But sometimes you have to play it out.
That's right.
Yeah,
right.
And I've done it many times.
And play it out, repeat it, you know, wash, rinse, repeat, yeah. You know, the whole
shit. I'm hoping 2020, I think I'm done with the mistakes. Like, I'm going to try to just have, like, no more mistakes.
I believe that. I feel like, you know what, even, I mean, I almost want to bring up yesterday, because, and you don't have to, you can take this out. But like, even yesterday I learned from, you know, coming and you know, just what I felt like started, you know, what happened prior to me coming. You know, how I couldn't nail it down.
Yeah, but then you were able to stop it and say, I don't think it's not good.
Yeah.
And that's what you got to do. We got to speak up.
That's true.
And just say, you know what, something doesn't work.
Yeah, this doesn't feel right.
Right. What we're talking about, you guys, is Abby came yesterday to record the podcast, and her topic was about being one of Louis C.K.'s people that spoke out against him.
Because, well, you had suggested it, and I wanted to please, you know, to I wasn't thinking about that, and then I thought, well, I can tackle that.
Right.
And I realized I couldn't get my mind around
it. It's too much. And so we're recording today.
Your birthday.
Yeah, so we recorded today instead, and it's perfect. And this is a really good story. And I'm sorry you had such a tumultuous relationship with your dad, but
I had a lovely, though. It was unique. It was one of a kind. Totally, I loved my father.
It's like your dad was Tony Soprano.
I know. He was more like a Larry David Soprano. But like,
interesting.
But I wish that, yeah, I guess maybe with all of it, and even a nod to my mother and my father, I wish in some ways we could just love freely, accept who they are. You know, like,
that's what we're trying to do.
That's true. And all those things I say about my dad, and even whatever, that's what colors my life. And to learn to, like, just. But yeah, my last words were not necessarily appropriate, and maybe they made me look bad, and maybe I dodged a bullet by not singing the DNA song at his funeral.
Yeah,
that might have been good.
I mean, yeah, that probably was a more personal thing, you know, in front of all the people from his life.
Exactly.
Keep that one to yourself.
They don't want to. They don't want a punk rock or heavy metal.
You're such an artist. I love everything you do. You guys go over to yourfriendabby.com and check out this amazing person. You're amazing.
You're nice.
2020 is going to be good, sister. I know it.
I hope so.
I feel good about it.
I think I do too. I don't feel, but I would like to figure out like what I'm going to work on next in terms of the book. Continue with the open micing. But you're devoted. I need your devotion.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know.
Well, you've got structure too. I mean, like, you've got a daughter and
you
came from the gym.
Yeah, I kind of have to structure my days and be very specific. All right. Anyway, you guys, listen, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Again, find Abby over there on Twitter at Abby Shack and on Instagram at your_friend_Abby. And then find me over there as well at Storyworthy. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Abby Shackner. Really, you are stunning.
You're so kind, Christine.
You really are.
Thank you, Christine. I'm glad I was here.
Me too. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a Storyworthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.